Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, are available on Spotify. Hope you got through another week, friends. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. And there's still, well, movies are still getting delayed and theaters are sort of opening, stage and movie theaters, slowly but surely. But we're going to do a little bit of stage sociology before we get into the film portion of the show. And Indie Bard Fest has a new production, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridge. And this is part of the they're doing outdoor shows, and they're following all the safety compliances. And there's tour dates coming up in Carmel, downtown Indy, Garfield Park, Noblesville, a slew of places, Lawrenceburg, and these are shows that are running through October 3rd. And earlier today, Friday, I got to speak with Glenn Dobbs, who is the founder of Indie Bard Fest. He is also the director of the show, and he and I have worked together a few times. So anyway, here's Glenn talking about the new production, what they've done to adjust it for these times, and what movies he's watched recently with some very humorous results. Enjoy. Well, Glenn, theater companies all over are kind of scrambling to see how they can do safe theater and still maintain some theater. What has been your experience with Bard Fest, the tour?
Well, this year we were planning, like many theater companies, a very ambitious festival with multiple great shows. We had new directors, a new prestige project that we were doing, and even a show for the Indie Fringe Festival. But then, as you know, and all your listeners know, the world caught fire with the pandemic, and the arts were one of the many casualties of this illness. So we were looking around at various things, and I happened to be in a meeting over at the Indie Fringe Theater, and I started eyeballing the Indie Fringe van, and I thought, well, maybe we could just get in the van like a theatrical Ghostbusters and go around town doing shows. And that's how the idea started.
Okay.
And, so it came from there. And so we then looked for a type of show that would lend itself to this kind of format, and we settled on the show we're performing now.
Okay. Well, because I know the script was written before any of this, so but it seemed
right.
Like it was one of those where adjustments could easily be made.
Yeah, it can. The Reduced Shakespeare Company, which has been around for 20-plus years, started off at Renaissance fairs. They were actually in an old church, and the three fellows that started the thing tried to say, well, what if we try to do all of Shakespeare's plays in 90 minutes? And it was a giant hit, and they hit on this idea of doing everything abridged, and they've now written, I think, a dozen different plays, everything from Shakespeare pieces like the one we're doing to like The Complete History of the World abridged, The Complete History of God abridged. You know, it's just very funny, fast-paced farcical comedy.
Yes. And yeah, I know the one that folks know the most is The Complete Works abridged. This time around, it's the long-lost first play. Now, I have not seen this one done. What's the background on it?
Well, a few years ago, in Leicester, England, which I had the chance to visit a couple of years ago, there was a parking lot. And in that parking lot, they were digging up part of it for some renovation, and they came across some old bones. And those bones turned out to be the monarch Richard III from Shakespeare's fame. And so the premise is our three actors were in that parking lot, and they came across some old bones, which they felt was totally unimportant. But underneath it, they found this manuscript, and it turned out it was Shakespeare's first draft of his very first play was a literary treasure house. And so our intrepid actors are going to try to perform this. The problem is the piece was written is over 100 hours long and has over 1,000 characters in it. So they said, well, we're going to have to abridge this, and that's what they did.
So it's the Avengers.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so it's abridged. And so what they do is this, that Shakespeare wrote a draft of this and put just about every character in all of his later plays in one single play. The thread that runs through it is Puck from A Midsummer's Night Dream and Ariel from The Tempest are in a death match. And because of all their magic, they bring one crazy character after another on stage as this battle ensues.
I see. Now, for those who know Glenn's work, you also borrowed this discovery for your production of Richard III a few years back.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
We did. And full disclosure, he had some radio hack in his show. So there's that.
Yes, we had. We were lucky enough to get the legend that is Matt Soucy play our king.
Yes. Yeah. You said you visited this spot before, right?
I did. It was incredible. If you go there, what they thought at the time was that when Richard died at the Battle of Bosworth, they thought they would take him to the local monastery and they would lay him in what's called the choir, which is the largest room in the monastery, sort of like where the altar would be at a church before they would later take him to his final burial site. So using all kinds of radiologic studies and things, they figured out that the choir ran along this parking lot. The crazy thing is this is not like a Walmart parking lot. This is a thin alley. Just two cars on each side that runs for about 75 yards. If the archaeological find was 20 feet to the right or 20 feet to the left, they never would have found anything. And so they decided to start digging, and they dug all of the parking slots were labeled A, B, C, D, et cetera. And crazy as it sounds, Richard was under the letter R. Yeah. And there's another part of the story that's even funnier is it was sponsored by the grant for this thing was by the Richard III Society, who felt that Shakespeare falsely maligned their monarch. And in fact, he was a good king, and there was no way he was really a hunchback in real life. And when they dug him up, yes, he was a hunchback.
Richard be the first one to tell you. So what you're saying is they basically paved history and put up a parking lot.
Yes, that could be a song.
I don't want her lawyers going after me, and I don't want any more artist lawyers paperwork or what have you. So.
Fascinating place to visit. It was really great.
Cool. Yeah. Now you mentioned earlier that there's a myriad of characters, and it reminds me. You mentioned that, and I think of like something like Titus Andronicus, where he takes similar story plot points and fleshes them out in further plays, like Othello and Macbeth to a certain degree. Sounds like this is almost like Shakespeare's greatest hits combined for...
Well, it's more Shakespeare's first draft. It has classic lines like, much ado about something really quite important, or beware the Ides of February, Hamlet's edible.
Thank you, Dr. Freud.
It has all kinds of this too fresh salad would be a tuna melt. The headlines like that. That later the Shakespeare decided I'm not going to put those in. Those are not going to work.
Right.
Hamlet falls in love with Lady Macbeth. It's really crazy. So.
Nice. So it's one of those that I like a bridge that, you don't have to have a degree in literature, but you can still enjoy it.
Absolutely. It's very accessible and it's very funny. And we have three of the best comedic actors in the town doing this, with Kelsey Van Horst, Matt Hartsburg, and Jonathan Scoble, who you recently did a play with. Let's see, what was that play?
That would be Henry IV, Part 1, because nobody likes Part 2.
Nobody likes Part 2. And what character were you again?
I was Falstaff.
Oh, my God, what a wonderful role.
Yes, the Shakespearean Lords of Beer. So.
Yes, exactly. And Falstaff's in this play, and he has a romantic relationship with Richard III.
I'll be in the front row with my arms crossed, taking notes. So I would say, how has rehearsals been with your trio?
Well, we've tried to do everything as safely as we can. We practice outdoors. We practice social distancing. During the actual performance, performers are not masked, but they're masked before and after, and they don't approach the audience. They don't get usually with these bridge shows. There's a lot of pull the audience up participation type thing. All of that's been cut. They stay well away from everybody, and it's been doing very well. We have a nice little rehearsal space that we've been working on, and only had to cancel once for rain, so not too bad so far.
And tell folks when and where this is taking place.
Well, it's taking place, and we actually are going on tour, like the Rolling Stones of Shakespeare. We're going to be everywhere from Noblesville to Lawrenceburg,
okay,
Indiana. And all of that can be found, the entire schedule, on indiebartfest.com. And there you'll see every venue we're going to be at with maps and times for all of this. We open a week from today, actually, on July 31st. We'll be at the new outdoor space at the Indy French Theater called Pocket Park. Those of you that are fans of the Indy French Theater know that the Indy 11 has kind of a garage door on the outside that can open to outdoor theater. And it's been done so very successfully here in the last few weeks. In fact, it's becoming the go-to outdoor theater in town. And we're going to open there for a couple of nights, and then from there to Carmel, and from there we travel to Noblesville, and then we're out of town for a little bit, and we come back. So it's quite the trip.
It has to be at least reassuring to know that, one, you're able to get art out, and also the
right.
fact that the four of you, I assume, well, you have a stage manager, that would be five. As far as you guys are doing something, as opposed to some of us who are just sitting in their offices and watching movies and then occasionally going out to walk.
Right. You know, it's funny how people respond so viscerally to live theater. I mean, people, human beings want connection. We're social animals by nature, and that's one of the big casualties of the coronavirus, is that we can't get together like we normally do. But at the same time, we have to try to do this in the safest manner as possible, and we think we have a formula to do that. Yeah, you're right. We have nothing but really nice stuff, people responding to this, and good Lord, it's a farce. There's three jokes every page of the script. It just goes on and on and on. Cleopatra falls in love with Bottom with donkey ears, and she says, "You must understand, I'm the Queen of England in my salad days. I love Caesar."
Of
course, the guy breaks the fourth wall and says, "Try to keep up with us, folks. We're rolling along." You know, it just goes and goes and goes. I think it's silly and fun and hilarious and the perfect medicine for these crazy times right now.
Absolutely, and I know other theater companies are kind of looking at each other like, who's going to jump out first and who's going to be, yeah, you know, that sort of thing. So it sounds like you got a good plan with Long Lost First Play.
I think so, and I think we're so excited about it because we've had such a positive response to it so far that when the world stops burning, I think we're going to have a touring company every year from now on, in addition to all of our other products that we offer. So I think it's going to be an ongoing thing.
Very good. Once again, tell people where to find the info.
Yeah, Indy, INDY, Bardfest, all one word, .com. Or you can find us on Facebook, and where all the current information is and event information as well. So we'd love to see you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Matt.
Well, of course. Well, now, before we go, actually, when you go and see the especially the Facebook page, were the costumes your idea?
The costumes were, yes, they come from our warehouse. Most of them were my idea, but we had some wonderful help from Linda Fedley-Grow, who is a wonderful costumer, well-known in the community, just does superb work. And we haven't shown you the best stuff, and we won't online yet with it, because she's created some wildly crazy things.
I see. So yeah, but I like the tie-in with the superhero movies along with Shakespeare.
Well, you know, the idea is the world's burning. We're going to save the world. We're going to answer the call. And who better for Oberon than Superman? it's wonderful stuff. Yeah. So those photos were all taken by the wonderful Antonio Chapitel.
Yes.
Great work here in the city. So we're just thrilled to have him as our, and I'm just going to say it, as our official Bardfest photographer, because he just does the best work for us. And we're going to be even people that like to follow us are going to get to see more, because Antonio is going to photograph the entire show next Thursday after we go to the secret preview show at the Clare Mansion in Carmel. You know, so that'll be fun.
Well, it's not a secret now that you brought it up.
Well, you can't get to it without going through the labyrinth of guards and electronic wires. And things,
oh, I see.
And stuff like that.
So okay.
It's very, 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 very hush-hush. It's all part of the Scottish Mason Temple or something. I'm not sure what it is.
I understand. Okay. Well, shifting. Well, that's okay. Well, you know, we'll get Catherine Zeta-Jones to go through the lasers. That'll work out well.
Oh, that'll work.
Yeah, I know.
I always enjoy her moving through lasers.
There's a commentary track just for that. No.
There is. The Criterion Collection.
Exactly. shifting gears, Glenn. What have you been watching since you've been cooped up at home, but not at rehearsal?
Oh, what did we watch lately? I've just been in so much rehearsal. You know, this is going to be a little weird, but you're in some downtime playing this cinematic game called The Last of Us. And, oh, my goodness, that needs to be a movie. And I think it's going to be on HBO. So it's this marvelous, sprawling tale that I enjoyed very much. But I haven't seen many other movies lately because I've been so busy and with it. I think you just told me the other day that you're on a Bruce Lee fetish right now.
I wouldn't use that word, but no,
I'm going to tell everybody about the poster you have in your room. You know.
We could do an entire show based on the posters in my younger days, but we shan't. No, I finished a Bruce Lee box set last week. And anyway, I'm actually going to start this interview for the show, and then I'm going to talk about what I've been discussing. However, it was a monumental. I wanted to cleanse my palate with Bruce Lee, so I've been watching a lot of Ingmar Bergman this past week, I'll break into that a little bit. But there are some things that I know in my household. And I'm sure it's the same with you. There's certain films you know you can watch solo. And then there are other ones you should really ask your lovely if you wanted to watch, if you want to watch it with them, or you should watch them together. Or you've been married long enough, you ask her if you want to watch something, even though 99.99% of the time you know what the answer is going to be.
Oh, yeah. For sure. But, she gets me watching movies that I don't usually watch, and it's always
like,
a good.
Like what?
Oh, God, you're making me think of it. I feel so bad. I usually have a memory for these things, but I can't quite come up at the top of my head. Let me switch over to Netflix, and I'll tell you. I have to be embarrassed.
No.
I've been watching trashy reality shows when I'm not doing theater because it's just easy on my mind, you know, with it. I don't have to. It just makes me feel better.
So wait, you're not plopping after an evening of rehearsal involving Shakespeare, you don't go home and plop down some Olivier to wind down?
No, I watched the Great British Baking Show, to be honest, but that's just how sad I am.
No. And don't worry, you're doing a fine, time-honored film sociology tradition of scrolling through screens as the show is going on, so you're all right.
Well, exactly. No. I did watch an action movie that got a lot of press on Netflix called The Old Guard, and I thought it was kind of okay. It wasn't that great. you know, with it. But I haven't seen another movie, another full-on film for a while.
Okay. Well, you've been
you
busy.
Any recommendations for me?
Well, you have to listen to the show now, wouldn't you?
Well, I do. I have it committed to memory. I'm now starting to have to go find Bruce Lee movies because I feel like I've been left out here.
Now, have you seen his work? You've seen Enter the Dragon at least, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's just been a little while, but yeah, I have.
These...
I did sit down and watch Amadeus the other day, but I'm goofy that way.
National Theater or film?
Yeah, National Theater. Yeah,
as did we.
What a spectacular thing.
Yeah, we saw it in the theater. We saw it at Keystone when it came out a few years back because Emma was, she sort of remembers the film, but was really blown away by this. And yeah, about a week it was available on YouTube, and it was great to revisit that. Really great performances. And also the fact that the musicians come on and off the stage. I think that's a brilliant piece of directing.
I the National Theater can just put up anything. It's fantastic. Their stage design is just amazing. Yeah. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. No, I've been really, really, struggling for a good movie because when we sit down, we're both kind of tired and we go, let's just watch Indian Matchmaker.
That's all right. It's okay.
I tell you, the one thing I did really totally trip out on, and I watched all 10 episodes, was the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance. That was amazing.
As a Pistons fan, that's nice.
Yeah, but no, it just went through that whole rivalry with the Pistons.
It does.
What happened. It's just really... And then one of the things is when they have the camera at court level and you realize just how blindingly fast this guy is.
Yeah.
You know, with it's just unbelievable. Great, great story. Great thing. I'll tell you a movie we did watch recently that the title escapes me, but it was about Wilt Chamberlain.
Then it must have been called 100.
No.
It must have been called 20,000.
No, I'm going to find this for you because you need to review this because it was filmed in a certain way that had a certain very stylized way of filming it because I was trying to make a point about Black Lives Matter and early Chamberlain, and it was just done in a brilliantly haunting way. It's giving me Richard Chamberlain movies.
No, trust me, Wilt never did a movie with Richard Chamberlain, I assure you. He was in Conan the Destroyer, but he was not working with Richard Chamberlain. He was not in the Thornbirds.
this was a certain film style. You would know all about this, but
okay.
I don't. I can't find it. And we're here in an interview, and I can't find it. I'm sorry.
You're listening to hot scrolling action here on Film Sociology. I'm here with Glenn Dobbs.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
It was just filmed. Oh, the other one I watched was got a lot of press in an art film. It was Into the Night or something. It was about an alien invasion in New Mexico.
Okay.
It won all these crazy awards, and it was filmed with like three cameras on the cheap type of thing, and it started off at Sundance and won a bunch of awards there. Then I heard about it on NPR during Fresh Air.
Oh, okay.
It's a terrific movie, very very haunting picture. But it is told totally from the point of view of just two people, and you never see what's so brilliant about it is you never see the monster or you never see anything. It's all done from their visualization and their type of thing, which lets you fill in all the gaps with it. It's just a brilliant movie. Yeah.
Okay, very good. We'll look into the Night, not to be confused with the Jeff Goldblum, Michelle Pfeiffer film of the same name back in 1985.
I think I'm getting the title. I'm terrible.
No, you're fine.
Somebody with Alzheimer's. Yeah.
Don't say that. I want a film with Wilt and Richard Chamberlain, but I don't know what it would be. So
the Thorn Basket.
Look at that.
Sorry.
See, you're doing fine. You're not. You're doing okay. So, well, Glenn, I really, really appreciate your time on here, and I hope folks are able to latch on to the tour and enjoy some theater, some safe theater outside and inside, or is it all outside?
It's all outside, yeah.
Okay.
All outdoors. And bring a beer, because iambic pentameter sounds so much better with alcohol.
Glenn, thanks so much for your time.
Take care, buddy.
That's Glenn Dobbs, the director of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, A Bridge, which is a part of Indie Bard Fest on tour. You can go to IndieBardFest.com for all the information. As Al mentioned, he mentioned it, July 31st and August 1st at the Indie Fringe Theater in downtown Indy, August 7th and 8th at the Cat Theater in Carmel, August 21st at 7 p.m. at the Garfield Park Outdoor Pavilion, and August 23rd, 4 p.m. at the Garfield Park Outdoor Pavilion next to the Arts Center, August 28th, 29th, and 30th at 7 p.m., 4 p.m. on the 30th at the Forest Park Shelter in Noblesville, September 12th at the Needhammer Green Space on East Washington Street at 7 p.m. September 19th at the Indie Fringe Theater. Well, you get that. And then Indie Fringe. And then October 3rd at Civic Park in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. So, yeah, IndieBardFest.com for all the information on that. And I have to tell you, right after the interview, Glenn texted me. And he wrote, finally, The Vast of Night was the Fresh Air recommended movie we watched. We also watched I Am Not Your Negro for the first time, and then lots of British baking shows. So thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it. All right. New in theaters, new in drive-in theaters, and video on demand from IFC Films is a thriller called The Rental. And it is... co-written and directed by Dave Franco, yes, that Dave Franco, and stars his wife, Allison Brie, as well as Dan Stevens, for you fans of Downton Abbey. And this is a thriller about two couples. We have a pair of brothers, and their bro energy is on the verge of being irritating. One of the brothers is married to Allison Brie. His business partner, female business partner, is also coupled up with the younger brother, who's not doing as well. And they decide to rent a gorgeous oceanside cabin for the weekend up in Northern California. I believe we say that. I believe it was shot in Oregon, but, you know, Pacific Northwest. And they go in, and it's for the first about half hour or so, we get the dynamics of traveling together. And that, and what is the dynamics between the two couples, and what happens when the dynamic between the two couples are mixed. And then we get to a turning point when a small camera is seen in a shower head, and then it starts to go down a different path. So as a kid for me, I think, and I remember this happening with some of my peers in college when I showed them The Exorcist, and nothing really scary happens until about 45 minutes into that film. And certain audience members of horror films, I think, have been desensitized that they expect scares right out of the gate. This one takes its time. Once it does, then we get into, is it stalker theater? You know, is it a stalker movie? Is it a horror film? Well, a haunted house film? You get a combination of the dynamics with these four, and then what happens when things start to go awry. Each one has their own idea of dealing with things, and then it really kicks in the last about 20 minutes or so. The film's under 90 minutes, and everybody in it is good. Dan Stevens, Allison Brie, Sheila Vaughn, Jeremy Allen White. You have Toby Haas as the caretaker. Yes, it's the new version of stopping at a gas station out in the middle of nowhere and being warned, or at least alluded to, passive-aggressive warnings from the haggard-looking gas station attendant. The film does what it's supposed to do, and it's quick, and there's an aftermath that has a very satisfying note if you are an animal lover. And you could say this is a cautionary tale for Airbnb if you are one to look into those. But it moves along, not a lot of blood, and the film does its job. And the fact that it's opening in drive-ins, I think that's going to work out well for it. It's better than nothing. It's also available video on demand. So check that out. And we're fans of Allison Brie at the Sosie House, so that was cool. All right. Before I tell you to get a pencil, I'm going to go through what I've watched this week, and then we'll go through some drive-through stuff, and then, of course, your comments. And this happens quite often. I forgot something from last week, and I thought I had it written down, but apparently my notes were just not clear enough for me. And this is going to happen for you parents of kids as they get older. My daughter is 18. She is on the verge of going to college. And sometimes the kid just starts to feel nostalgic. And it was a particularly tiring day, if I remember correctly. And Emma put in because she wanted to, and I was there, and I really wasn't putting up much of a fight. I think I had also had a long day as well. But Emma and I watched last week, before, like I said, before, since I forgot, Barbie and the Princess and the Pauper. Now, having a girl, there are a number of these animated Barbie films, 12 Dancing Princesses, Barbie and the Three Musketeers, which I wound up buying because I directed Emma in a production of the Three Musketeers. You kind of get the idea. Apparently the same voice actors that work on this, although the one voice of note in this, there is a villain and it's voiced, the foppish villain is voiced by Martin Short. So, you know, there's that. But Emma was giddy, and anytime I can get my 18-year-old to be giddy, we're going to do that. So, and I think for revisiting films like this or TV shows like this, this is the kid's first, a child's first introduction to the concept of nostalgia. I think when they go to elementary school or middle school, they're, you know, if they go, once they're in middle elementary school and it's either summer or they're sick and they're stuck at home, sometimes for comfort, they will go back to what they watched when they were younger in middle school, elementary school, so on and so forth. So that's what we went through at the Soci House. And there's nothing wrong with that. Going back to last week, I try to do this whenever possible, try to watch an old movie on Friday nights because that's what I have in my head, and definitely a midnight movie on Saturday nights. Last weekend, after doing the house party, and thanks Criterion for doing these, I revisited for the first time in a long time John Waters' Multiple Maniacs. Yes, the old cavalcade of perversions. This is from 1970. This is before Pink Flamingos. And it's get past the perverted stuff, which happens very quickly, and it's really not that bad. And you've seen worse out there, folks, I assure you. But John Waters loved the big studio melodramas, and he did this on a much smaller scale, and his Elizabeth Taylor was divine. So, but I'm just happy that Criterion and Jonas have been putting out the John Waters films for everyone to enjoy forever. It's cheaper and smaller than, say, obviously Pink Flamingos, and this is the one he did after Mondo Trash. This one actually had a sound score, but there's some shady goings on with Divine's boyfriend going sneaking away on the side, and what Divine is character is going through. There is a little bit probably the thing that's this film is most famous for, and it's a surrealist turn, cinema of the absurd. But there's an attack scene where Divine is assaulted by a giant lobster, and we'll leave it. And then we get a Godzilla-like climax and a moment with Divine running through the streets like a monster and being chased by the National Guard. And all of this happened before Kent State. So just be aware of that. Anyway, it's like I always say with John Waters films, it's not for everybody, but you should experience one just so you can say you did. Later on in the week, the Soucy family revisited, because it was available on YouTube, National Theater Live's Amadeus. Still holds up, great lead performances. And this is the production done by the National Theater where the musicians come on and off the stage, and flows really, really well. It was fun to revisit that film. Now, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Now, last week, of course, was very Bruce Lee heavy because of the Criterion box set, Bruce Lee, His Greatest Hits, and trying to catch up on my never-ending piles of movies that I like to watch. And, of course, the Barnes & Noble half-off Criterion thing is still going on. But July 30th will be the anniversary. This will be the 13th year anniversary of the death of Ingmar Bergman. And I decided to go back to the Ingmar Bergman box set That's how you cleanse your palate after watching Bruce Lee for several days. It's a really cool collection, and it's curated, so it's not in chronological order. It's more in themes. And I'm at the English language portion of Bergman's career. His first English language film, and it wasn't entirely in English, was the 1971 drama The Touch, which starred B.B. Anderson and Elliot Gould. Anderson is the wife of a surgeon played by Max von Sydow. This is actually the last time Max and Ingmar worked together. And Anderson's mother has just died and is going through some serious grieving. And at the hospital, she meets Elliot Gould, an American archaeologist, and they wind up having an affair. And as the affair goes on, Gould is still torn by his family, losing his family to the Holocaust, and what happens when two hurt people are trying to bond together. It's interesting to see a kind of a straightforward drama from Bergman. Nothing political, nothing. Well, there is a little bit of aspect with the Holocaust, but it's not as surreal as, say, something like Persona, which we're going to get to in a little bit, and not as experimental as the others. But decent performances by the two leads, and Max von Sydow was always good, of course. The follow up to this, his second English language film from 1977, many have dubbed this Bergman's worst film. I would still say I think Bergman's worst is far better than a lot of people's best, but it's The Serpent's Egg from 1977 with David Carradine, Liev Ullmann, James Whitmore is in this. Glenn Turman gets a cameo. I forgot about that. But it's set in Berlin in 1923, and it goes through the week of an American circus acrobat played by Carradine who is struggling to survive during the social decay in Germany. It's Bergman's biggest budgeted film. It was produced by Dino De Laurentiis. And watching an interview with Liev Ullmann, who plays a cabaret dancer, who is hooked up with Carradine's character, was apparently Bergman felt a little overwhelmed and was more about the size of the budget than the intimacy of the characters. And I see that to a certain degree. It probably doesn't help that this came 5 years after Cabaret. You know, a better film and livelier film about the social decay in Germany before the rise of Hitler. Serpent's Egg comes from, well, you know, you kind of figured that one out for you literary fans out there. But it's not a bad film. It's just a step down, I think, from stuff like Persona and Cries of Whispers and Autumn Sonata. But it's an interesting one. It's an interesting film nonetheless. And if you're a Bergman fan, it's always worth. I think it's worth checking out. You might not watch it a second time, but it's worth checking out to cleanse my palate because it was there. Woody Allen's Vicky Cristina Barcelona with Rebecca Hall, Javier Bardem, Scarlett Johansson, Patricia Clarkson. This was in Woody's traveling to Europe because that's where he's getting the money phases. And not so much a romantic triangle, but maybe a romantic rectangle. So anyway, I'm one of those. I can still watch his films and sleep at night. But that's another subject for another time. Then after The Touch and after The Serpent's Egg, we get to Persona, Bergman's 1966 masterpiece with B.B. Anderson and Liev Ullmann. And it's basically the two of them. Ullmann plays an actress who blows a line on stage and is gone silent. And B.B. Anderson plays a nurse that is assigned to take care of her. The patient is physically and mentally healthy. She's just not speaking. And this is a film, I think more people know the reputation of the film than possibly seeing the film itself. If you think of the philosophy of Jung, we're kind of one in two people. And there's quite a bit of that in with the chemistry between Anderson and Ullmann. Obviously, Anderson does the heaviest of the verbal performances of the film. She's very, very chatty. And as time goes on, we find out, is the actress studying her or not? It is how we are one in the same, and we are the two sides of a human coin, I guess. And the film also reminds you that you're voyeuristic. So But it's in the great black and white of Sven Nykvist photography. Two really good performances. Ullman says a lot with her eyes in this, which she has to. But there's moments of the Holocaust and some surreal imagery and some crucifixions, and I think that throws people off. And I think people know the homages or the spoofs of Bergman more than they do the actual content. I mean, this is right up there with Playing Chess with Death. But going through the disc of the collection, and I'm getting close to finishing it. I think I have about five or six more discs to go. But on this particular Persona disc, there is a lovely documentary that I had not seen called Liv and Ingmar. And it's told by Liv Ullman about her relationship with Ingmar Bergman. And you get to see Faroe Island. That's basically Bergman's island in Sweden. You get to see it in color, which I have in really bright color. Really nice video photography work on this one. But it's her telling the story, the up and down relationship on and off camera, romantic and platonic. There's also some narration of his letters. And 5 decades and 2 friends. And it's really, really fun to watch. The collection then takes a shift to a couple of dramas from the 1940s, the late 40s. We go to Thirst from 1949, an affair with an older man and a younger woman, and what happens when the wife visits the apartment. There is that, and the girl becomes pregnant, and it's kind of a multi-layered drama, and it starts to be one of the first times that Bergman digs into the female psyche, which probably is why this film follows Persona in the collection. The girl's is a ballet dancer and really takes things hard when the wife and the former lover show up. So it's just an interesting little footnote compared to his other more grandiose stuff. The other film on this collection is called Port of Call from 1948, and where a woman jumps literally into the bay to kill herself, and a man of the sea, a sailor, saves her from drowning. And the relationship that those two build, and when she eventually opens up about her past, being in and out of reformatory, working in a work release program in a factory. And what happens is they wind up spoiler alert on a 70-year-old film. But it's nice chemistry between the two actors. And what do you run away from someone's problems when they've opened up to you, or do you stick it out and fight together? So those are from the Bergman collection. I'm hoping to move into do some more Bergman for next week. And then we had family dinner night, and my family had not seen Knives Out, which I had seen before and enjoyed it, and a fun, you know, the fun ensemble whodunit from last year. Got a screenplay nomination, should have got art direction, great production design, and fun performances from everybody from, well, of course, Daniel Craig gets to do the Southern accent, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, Jamie Lee Curtis, Chris Evans and his sweaters. Careful, gang. But no, a fun, that it was one of those, it just fit perfectly after having dinner with the family. Criterion has put out Marriage Story on Blu-ray this week. Capone, if you want to see Tom Hardy fall apart in the last days of Al Capone's life. Clueless has been reissued for its anniversary. Criterion has also put out A Taste of Cherry, and the animated film Scoob is out on DVD and Blu-ray as well. Just a reminder that the Indie Shorts International Film Festival is running through the 26th. You can go to Heartland Film Festival, heartlandfilm.org/indie shorts for all the information over there. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In on Screen One, they're showing The Rental as well as the other new thriller, Amulet. On Screen Two, the Heartland Film Fest, so you can see these at the drive-in. Screen Three, the first film is Harriet, and then The Wiz. Wow. And in Screen 4, you have the original Karate Kid and the original Back to the Future, the first Back to the Future. So that's over at the Tibbs Drive-In. It's apparently Dogapalooza at the Skyline Drive-In. They're showing The Secret Life of Pets and The Great Outdoors, the John Candy, Dan Aykroyd comedy from 1988. That's happening over at the Tibbs. Okay, grab a pencil. Let's see what you've been watching. So we start with my buddy Eric, who sends me a nice long email. He's also going through season 4 of Mad Men. That's always good. First time viewing Children of Hiroshima from 1952, which he deemed excellent. And The Way Back from 2020. That was the one with Ben Affleck as the recovering alcoholic who gets a basketball coaching job. Fair to middling, as he called it. The Vikings from 1958. That's the one with Kirk Douglas, Janet Leigh, Tony Curtis, and Ernest Borgnine, which he deemed good. His rewatches, One-Eyed Jacks from 1961, he deemed extra good. And it's the one and only film directed by Marlon Brando because Kubrick left. It's also a good, there's a good Criterion treatment of One-Eyed Jacks if you get a chance to see that. As sometimes happens on Facebook, I go, I post on Thursdays and I still get I still get comments after the fact, but that's okay. Jim writes, El Dorado, my favorite John Wayne Western. Okay. If I had to do a list, I'm not sure if it'd be in my top 10, but it's still a solid one with Robert Mitchum, a young James Caan, and Michelle Carey. Ooh, always good. Scott writes Used Cars, which that's another one I need to revisit. Andra Fay, hi Andra, hope you're feeling better, hope you're feeling uppity. Greyhound and It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Jennifer writes Do the Right Thing. James writes, just revisited Almost Famous. It may be my favorite, quote-unquote, band movie. David writes, The Five Bloods. John writes, The Biggest Little Farm, in all caps, fantastic. I'm like one major catastrophe from living their dream and moving out and away and becoming a farmer. Hang in there, John. Julie writes, Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the Wonderfully Awful Roadhouse. It's pizza and a beer. Robert Muggy, who's been on the show. Sorry I'm a bit late in responding. Let's see. Most recently, after watching the last of the Western noir films on the Criterion Channel, I watched Cy Ming Lang's Rebels of the Neon God, Alberto Lituada's Mafioso, Tim Whelan's The Divorce of Lady X, and Mike Lee's Naked and the Short and Curlies. Okay. Thank you, Robert. Judith writes, Old Guard and Barefoot in the Park. I'm a sucker for Neil Simon and Robert Redford. We all are, Judith. Alan writes, Really Long Kiss Goodnight, the underrated sequel. Lisa writes, Green Book. Eric writes, Catch 22, trying to catch up on some quote-unquote essential films that have been on my list for a while, but I haven't watched before. Good for you, Eric. That's what I'm hoping is happening at houses all over the place if we're stuck indoors. Mike White writes, The Lion Has 7 Heads. Cassandra writes, Hacksaw Ridge, and she added a heart. Megan writes, Harriet. Steven writes, did a double bill the other night of William Wellman's Wild Boys of the Road from 1933 and Howard Hawks's and William Wyler's Come and Get It from 1936. Brian writes, Event Horizon, Final Girl, and Casino. And Heather chimed in, I liked Final Girl more than I thought I would. Bonnie writes, Harriet, Slapshot, and Tommy. Christy writes, I gave Christy some grief on this. I watched older comedies this week. Joe Dirt, Baby Mama, Knocked Up, How Do You Know, Just Friends, and A Bad Mom's Christmas. And I responded that the women, Bringing Up Baby, Duck Soup, and His Girl Friday are not happy. I wrote something else. But yeah, older comedies. Jared writes, Escape from Alcatraz and Convoy. Jared, I see you at a drive-in watching those two. That would be great. Molly writes, the horror flick Malevolent and Pretty in Pink, because I will always stop to watch Pretty in Pink. Rebecca writes, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the National Theater performance of Amadeus. That was briefly on YouTube. We got that one as well, Rebecca. Tony writes, Rocket Man. Mary writes, 7 Year Itch. Joshua writes, The Old Guard. The Core, do not recommend. Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, and Hamilton, again. Maya writes, The Joker and Shadow. Nick writes, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw, The Outpost, Air Force One, Armor of God 2, Operation Condor, The Big Brawl, Police Story 4, First Strike. Maria writes, we watched Knives Out last night. Frankie writes, The Muppet Movie, Labyrinth, Jojo Rabbit, and Grand Budapest Hotel, none of which I had seen before this weekend. Congratulations, Frankie. Dustin writes, Shop Around the Corner, The Three Musketeers, from 1948. Adam's Rib, Guys and Dolls, The Subject Was Roses, and Scrooged. Manny writes, actually experienced 1971's Doc starring Stacy Keach and Faye Dunaway last weekend for the first time. Very good. Enjoyed Harris Yulin's Wyatt Earp. Yep. Joe Shearer writes, The Outpost, Ravage, Countdown, Centigrade, A Kid from Coney Island, Radioactive, the 2018 version of Halloween, She Dies Tomorrow, Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning, Back to the Future 3, Part 3, and Rebuilding Paradise. And then added, that doesn't count indie short films I've covered as well. Understood. Taylor writes, My Fair Lady, Dread, Sleepless in Seattle, Three Strangers, Noir Alley, Clash of the Titans, The Show Must Go On, Sherlock, A Scandal in Belgravia, and Batman, The Mask of the Phantom. Evan writes, Evan Dossie, I started watching Fu Manchu movies loaned out to me by Bob Bloom. Wow, you're set, Evan. Sean writes, Six Underground was fun. Mostly watched old $6 Million Man episodes and binged Warrior Nun. Julie writes, The Three Faces of Eve. Julie, that's on my list. That's on my pile as well. I need to get to that. Sam Watermeyer writes, Thoroughbreds, Memento, and Silence of the Lambs. Darren writes, Mark of the Vampire, Waiting for Guffman, Batman and Robin. Bill writes, A Noir Week, Impact, Detour, and The Maltese Falcon. I had never seen How Green Was My Valley, so I watched that on a TCM double John Ford double feature with The Grapes of Wrath that I hadn't seen in 30 years. Also, Hamilton and Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story. Good list there, Bill. Mark writes, Blinded by the Light, The Mustang, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. All are good. That last one is jaw-dropping, and my jaw doesn't drop for just anything. Devin writes, Ted, Life Animated, and Gilbert. I hope you liked Life Animated, Devin. We did. Cassie writes, Ginger Snaps and A Farewell to Arms. Michael writes, I'm almost finished with Knives Out. I hope you weren't typing this while you were watching Knives Out. Britt writes, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, and Return of the King, Girls Trip, Life of Brian, Monty Python at the Hollywood Bowl, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the female version of Ghostbusters, X-Men Apocalypse, Harvey Girls, My Spy, Shazam, Trolls World Tour, and the musical version of The Producers. And you're right, Britt, he's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. Jessica writes, Spartacus and Avengers Age of Ultron. Julie writes, The Umbrella Academy. What a strange scenario. Rachel writes, The Wolfman and Chronicles of the Ghostly Tribe. Emily writes, Tangled and Megamind. I'm planning to watch Knives Out tonight, too. Alex writes, Watch Palm Springs. Also working through some Steven Spielberg's catalog with my sons, 9 and 19, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Temple of Doom. Lou Harry writes, Dr. Sleep, the National Theater production of Amadeus, Crazy for You from PBS, and a wonderful comedy I can't mention because embargoed. Oh, thanks, Lou. Carrie writes, Scoob. Bennett writes, Naked Lunch, Casino, and Seven Samurai. Mandolin writes, American Graffiti. Duke writes, His Girl Friday, Horse Feathers, and Mortal Engines. Not very good, by the way. Duke wrote that. It's in parentheses. Tony writes, oh, Tony had a double feature. Jackie Brown and Django Unchained. Jeff writes, Introduce my youngest to Spies Like Us. Tell Donna and tell Vanessa to call me. Joni writes, The Big Chill. Nancy also watched The Big Chill. James writes, Tetsuo, The Iron Man. Cassandra writes, Terminator Dark Fate. Awesome to see Linda Hamilton reprise her role from the last Terminator movie. John writes, Remember, pretty good film. Christopher Plummer sold it well. That's from the drama from 2015. Jamie writes, X-Men, X-Men 2, The Last Stand, and First Class. I don't remember having ever watched the X-Men movie, so I'm fixing that. Thank you, Jamie. Joe writes, Bringing Up Baby, Collateral, and Sully. Tom writes, Hi, Sierra. Gary writes, Terror Creatures from the Grave. Kane writes Force of Nature. Melissa writes Devil's Advocate, lots of Avengers films, and The Disappointments Room. Leah writes The Old Guard, We Are Freestyle, Love Supreme. Daniel writes Relative Values, Family Reunion, One Special Night, Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, Queen of Spades, Something for the Boys, And Then There Were None, Darling Lily, The Man Who Loved Women, the Truffaut version, Mildred Pierce, The Last Metro, Lights Out, and Fahrenheit 451. Thank you, Daniel. Scott writes History of the World Part 1. Teresa writes Life of Brian and Argo. And Molly jumped in. That's a magnificent combination. Molly also added A Magical Evening with Beverly Luff Lynn, Frost Nixon, Toward the Pharmacy, and Grey Gardens. Grace writes Outlaw King. It's a war movie, but it looked fun to make, and I enjoyed it. And Toy Story 4. Howell writes Kentucky Fried Movie. Absolutely could not be made today. You are correct, Howell. You have a comment of extraordinary magnitude, and you have our gratitude. And, of course, second Kentucky Fried Movie reference in 2 weeks since I watched Enter the Dragon and the Bruce Lee box set. Abdul Kim Shabazz is on here, and he wrote Destroy All Monsters. Now, Abdul, I believe that is a film title, not a command. Khalif writes, I just watched Parasite for the third time. I love that film. Also watched Sicario again. Lisa writes, The Ice Storm. George writes, Molly's Game. Kathleen writes, 2 weeks' Notice. Kathleen, I had a funny moment. I will bring this up. My wife works late, and I sleep earlier. And there are times where, and sometimes the TV is just left on. And sometimes what happens is when the TV is on, who's ever on the TV sometimes winds up in my dreams. And sometimes this can be good and sometimes, but I had Hugh Grant and Sandra Bullock in my dreams because I could hear the end of 2 weeks' Notice. So I'm not going to say what happened. So there. Jesse writes Zardoz, Four Flies of Grey Velvet, Holy Mountain, and Dragon Slayer. There's a weekend. Robert writes Humphrey Bogart in High Sierra, Henry Fonda in The Grapes of Wrath. Chloe writes Dr. Sleep, Emma, Ready or Not, and Ratatouille again. Emily writes, they're not films, but they feel very film-like, The Mandalorian. Emily, I understand. Deb writes, I've watched Contact and The Man from Earth. Ruthie writes Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga, and The Holy Grail. Frank writes Rewatch The Point, which, of course, came out on Blu-ray earlier this year. Carla writes Knives Out, Blow the Man Down, it was very Fargo-ish. Walter writes The Gentleman and Birds of Prey. Alan writes Bullet and the French Connection. There's a car double feature right there for you. Rosanna writes Monty Python would follow Bruce Lee very well. Oh, thank you, Rosanna. I'm getting tips to cleanse my palate. Gregory just gave me a gif of Sean Connery driving as James Bond. Thank you. Nick writes this week's movies. My 13, your surprising requests. Okay, that's just worded weird. Citizen Kane. Bridesmaids, the documentary Brian Eno, 1971 to 77, as well as The Man Who Fell to Earth. Also watched A Fistful of Dollars due to the passing of Ennio Morricone. Understood. And then for TV, watching the first season of Mary Hartman, and the new series Upload. Allison writes, Sleepwalker, loved it, especially because they didn't explain everything, so it left you with questions. Miss Meadows, a dark but sweet love story. Eli, okay, if not a little predictable. Only well done, great acting. Dinner for Schmucks, hilarious. Next, okay, but not great. Vivarium, not great, weird, and didn't make much sense. And Night Hunter, meh. Catherine writes Lilo and Stitch. Nancy writes The Firm, which I saw in the theater with you and Muncie. That's right, Nancy, you did. I remember that. That's another discussion for another time. No, nothing. Nothing to write home about, folks. I love Nancy. She's great. Good Will Hunting. Strange seeing Weinstein's name in the opening credits. You're just going to have to get past that. He basically put money to, you know, he did the money to have great films made. So we're just going to have to work through that. Joe versus the Volcano, The Big Chill, a favorite of my dad's and mine, Boogie Nights, I love this movie every time I see it, True Romance, the Gandolfini-Arquette fight scene is amazing, and Ghost, dare I say Swayze was miscast. And then there was a bit of a back and forth between a few people, and it's fine. I will give you a tip, and Nancy learned this. If you use the term miscast, I'm probably going to ask, who would you cast in the role? It's like when somebody says, there's a famous caller named Jeremy from The Score who said that he could name 10 players better than LeBron, and the host made him do it, and he kind of fell apart after five or six suggestions. So anyway, there's that. All right, back to the list. Ryan writes, I don't feel at home in this world anymore. It was okay. Jackie writes, The Old Guard, We Are Freestyle Love Supreme, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, Best in Show, and Carrie Pilby. Marty writes, Border. Yes, Marty, you've told me that. Joan writes, The Greatest Showman. Kathy writes, True Lies. Jared says, I didn't watch any movies this week, but I just finished reading As You Wish. Does that count? It's fine, Jared. Moveen writes, Bad Times at the El Dorado, Jeff Bridges and Plot Twist. That is correct. David writes, The Hospital, a flawed movie, but man, I really had forgotten how good George C. Scott was in his prime. You are correct there, David, and it also helps that you have Diana Rigg in that, and Paddy Chayefsky's screenplay. Joni writes, Well, I'm a bit late to comment, but my soon-to-be senior in high school and I've been watching the Diary of a Wimpy Kid movies. All but the last one, because both my kids for me, that you're not supposed to watch the last one. Okay. And we laughed so hard at all the ones we did watch as if we had been watching them for the very first time. Very good, Joni. Christian writes, Disclosure, very moving and inspiring documentary. Not the Demi Moore, Michael Douglas thriller from the 90s. Tom writes, Ravenous, a Canadian zombie flick. And Susan writes, Camelot. It's only a model. No, she's talking about the musical. And there you go. So hopefully you got some ideas. You jotted down some titles. And hopefully you're doing a combination, as I always say, of new films, or at least new to you, as well as old favorites to fall back on. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. I'm going to end this week's show with a little bit of something old and something new. Omnivore Recordings has reissued some 70s albums from the Staple Singers, including the soundtrack to Let's Do It Again. You have the Staple Singers with music by Curtis Mayfield. That's right, Sidney Poitier, Bill Cosby, Jimmy Walker, and a slew of that guys coming off the bench. So it'd be fun to end it with this. So anyway, here are the Staple Singers with Let's Do It Again. So stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane, and be good to one another out there, okay? And we'll try again next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, everybody.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
when I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!